This podcast on Sports360AZ.com is brought to you by your Valley Hyundai dealers. We appreciate the Valley Hyundai dealers and their support.
Now, the Brad Sesmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network studios.
Great Tuesday. Thanks for being with us. We are loaded up today on the guest front, and I got a lot on my mind. I just saw this as we were starting the show. Eric, I don't know if you saw the Connor McDavid dressing up as Donald Trump. Oh,
I did not, sure, but that's pretty amazing.
That is not going to be going over very well today. It just popped up. Connor McDavid dressing up as Donald Trump for Halloween. How's that working in Canada? So,
well, happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween. Right back at you. Pedro Gomez is going to be with us today from the World Series. Pedro live at 10:20. Peter King will be with us today at 10:35, Skyping in his reaction to the Jimmy Garoppolo trade, the 49ers. What do the Cardinals do here? Last week we talked about Carson Palmer, and Peter's stance was he should stick around another year and mentor. He believes that Carson would be open to that. This is more along the lines of the 49ers not believing, in my opinion, in all the quarterbacks in this year's draft that are going to be coming out. Sam Darnold, Josh Rosen, Baker Mayfield, Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen, all of them. Mason Rudolph, that, you know, the 49ers are probably going to have a top three, top four pick. And so they pass. We'll talk about the trade and really the impact. Now you look at the NFC West, which was at one time the NFC worst. I think Jared Goff's getting it figured out in Los Angeles. Garoppolo, how can he not fail in San Francisco? He'll get his head kicked in. Sure, to start with. He's going to get his head kicked in. But it's, I know John Lynch very well, all the way back to when he was in high school. And this is one of those deals where they're going to get it figured out up in San Francisco. And Russell Wilson's getting it done in Seattle, and we're sitting here in Arizona with a guy with a broken arm and a backup. And so is this the time to make the move? To go after the young quarterback versus go after another established veteran? Is Kirk Cousins the guy? All that stuff. So Peter King will join us live at 10:35 to make sense of it. And then Michael Fabiano from the NFL Network, fantasy football analyst, the Hall of Famer. We talk fantasy football for about 10 minutes every Tuesday. And you can shoot your questions to me on Twitter at Brad Sesmatt. There is still time for some questions in the mailbag. So a jam-packed show. Obviously, the news of the day, to me, is tonight being Game 6 of the World Series. What has been terrific baseball. The ratings here in Phoenix, it was almost twice the audience watching baseball over football on Sunday night here in Phoenix. Fox 10 had like a 14-6. KPNX, Channel 12, had like an 8. Okay, so a big audience that watched baseball rather than the NFL. Not a surprise. Actually, pretty refreshing to see. The NFL is going to be there every week. But after the run the Diamondbacks had, why not have it be a baseball town here in October? And that's the way that I like it. But you have Verlander tonight against Rich Hill. So Justin Verlander comes to Houston, an opportunity to win a championship, and people in Detroit were thrilled for Justin Verlander to get out of the Tiger uniform because they wanted him to win a title. Today being the NFL trade deadline, I'm sure there's some of you that would like to see Larry Fitzgerald be given that same opportunity. Hey, Fitz, let's free Fitz, let's send him somewhere, and let's wave the white flag that this season is over. Some of you probably believe that. Others of you still believe that the Cardinals have a shooter's chance, a puncher's chance, at getting into the postseason, and I'm of the mindset that the thing has gotten stale here in Arizona. If I got a note today that said Larry Fitzgerald was traded from the Arizona Cardinals to fill in the blank today, I'd be thrilled for Larry. I am always about the players first. Not the owners first. I am about the players first. And I feel bad that as Larry's in the twilight of his career, even though he's putting up big numbers, that he's sitting here on a team that's got a backup running back, that's got a, and you don't give me that the Adrian Peterson that we're seeing now is the Adrian Peterson from his glory days in Minnesota. I would not be upset at all if the Cardinals took that position. It's getting close, and after seeing the Rams just to completely destroy them, and the Cardinals have no semblance of a running game, have nothing working right for them on the offensive side of the football. The window, people like to use the term window and all that stuff. I felt for the last couple of years that this thing is just kind of meandering along. If not for Steve Keim hitting on David Johnson, okay? Don't give me Tyrann Mathieu because Tyrann Mathieu has been hurt. And the Cardinals gave him a lot of money because, well, I thought he deserved it on the front end of his career. Now you look at that contract, and I would be surprised if Tyrann Mathieu were back with the Cardinals next season. I would be. I don't have anything against him, not hating on him. It's just the economics of the deal that are in place don't make sense right now as we're sitting here coming into the first week of November. You go up and down this roster, and you know, you look at what Calais Campbell is doing in Jacksonville, and sorry, that's turned out to be a horrible decision to not keep him here. It just has. And you can go through the economics of that one, too. That's part of the NFL. You've got to make some economic decisions on players. And so with the division, with Jimmy Garoppolo going to the 49ers yesterday, it doesn't matter to me if C.J. Beathard starts this week. I don't care. I don't care if the Cardinals go up there and win a game in November if two teams are just mired in mediocrity. That doesn't matter to me. What matters to me is moving forward, the Cardinals are now in a division where three of the four teams have their future figured out or the present figured out at quarterback. If I have to sit here through another offseason of we've got it figured out with Carson, it's just banging my head against the wall. They have refused to move on this the last 2 years. And so now here we are in a space where I don't see this turning out the right way. This is all on tape. If the Cardinals make a run and win eight in a row and go the postseason, yeah, I'm a fool. Got it. But I would think most of you, if you're looking at this objectively and not through everything is great, everything is wonderful, that this is the business side of the NFL, it's gotten stale. Adrian Peterson is something nice to throw out at fans, just like Emmett Smith was. And last week against a really good defense that gets paid an awful lot of money, what happened? They got blown up. And so today with the trade deadline here, I would not be upset if the Cardinals took the tact of we are not heading in the right direction, which is to be a title contending team. It hasn't worked out. So if Jared Valdir has to go, Jared Valdir can go. If it's Larry Fitzgerald has to go, you know, I'm not hearing that he's going to go, but I would not be upset with Steve Keim today. I'd be upset with Steve Keim if it were young players, players that have come in and have proven themselves. And I would put an asterisk by Robert Kimdiche. Look, you're going to miss on first-round picks. You just are. And there comes a point where you have to look at it and say, boy, this really hasn't worked out. A year and a half into it, it hasn't worked out. I am not saying that they should trade him today. I'm not saying that. I'm not saying they should. But what I am saying is if Steve Keim decided, because he's there every day, I'm not. If the work ethic and the improvement is not coming through consistently, you're better off in this business to get rid of dead weight. You're better off in this business to get rid of baggage. And so as the deadline rolls through today, yeah, I can go through all sorts of timelines of insiders and say this might happen and that might happen. I know this is a fact that Garoppolo going to the 49ers hurts the Cardinals. It just does. He's going to do well there. Really looking forward on a Tuesday to the weekend. USC and Arizona. Khalil Tate does not get much Heisman attention at all. For the fourth week in a row, he's been named Pac-12 Player of the Week. 4 weeks in a row. Last week, he threw the football, something he had not shown. We've all seen him run, but have not seen him throw. Washington State, U of A, lit them up. The Wildcats crushed Washington State. And Khalil Tate ran all over the Cougars. Now, Washington State didn't have Luke Falk at quarterback, and yet U of A still allowed 600 yards of defense. Of total offense to Washington State. Their defense gave up 600 yards. So this week for Khalil Tate, it's going out to L.A. It's the ESPN 7:45 national game. And it's a chance for Khalil Tate to show his thing finally on a national stage. And Sam Darnold, you know, last week ASU could not control Sam Darnold. U of A did have four interceptions last week against the Cougars. Picked them off four times. But U of A's defense still gave up 600 yards. So looking forward to that this weekend. We'll get more into the Heisman race. The Coyotes actually won a game, break them up. They had their first win. They won in overtime last night to Philadelphia. I watched the end of that. They tried really hard to give it away. They tried really, really hard. They had both hands around their neck, rather than their sticks. But somehow they managed to win it. And they're at Detroit tonight. Good for them. And the Suns play tonight at Brooklyn. All on My Mind brought to you by Sagicor. Appreciate Sagicor Insurance, Sagicor Life, Sagicor Now. Go to Sagicor Now and get yourself taken care of, you and your family. Sagicor, a big part of what we do here at Sports360AZ.com. We appreciate their support. Your family is important, as are you. Check out Sagicor Now. Pedro Gomez from Los Angeles. Tonight, Game 6 of the World Series. ESPN Baseball Analyst Insider, one of the best in the business. Pedro Gomez is next. I'm Brad Sussmat. And now we go to Los Angeles, where Pedro Gomez is standing by for tonight's game number 6. ESPN baseball analyst and insider, Valley resident. Are you already at the stadium doing live shots? Has your day already started?
No, not yet, thankfully.
Yeah. You're going to be a day like today for you will look like what? What will it look like for Pedro Gomez?
First pitch is 5:20, so I will be at the ballpark at about 12. And interview rooms open at about 1, and it's just, you know, it's possibly the last day of the season. So there'll be live shots. There'll be we have our Baseball Tonight people here, and it'll be wall to wall.
And who do you want to talk to today in the locker room? Game 6.
Well, the clubhouses don't open in post game scenarios. So we can't go into the clubhouse pregame ever in the playoffs.
It's who they bring out to.
Well, the two managers, and they'll just bring out a player TBA because there is no game tomorrow per se. They may bring out the Game 7 starters. They sometimes don't.
Right.
Because you don't know if there's a Game 7. But you can usually talk to somebody during BP. So, you know, Correa certainly is somebody I'd like to talk to. He's never been in a situation like this. But more than anything, I think it'll be interesting to see how Rich Hill and Justin Verlander are doing. Now, we don't talk to the starting pitchers on the day they pitch.
Right.
Before a game, but there'll be definitely some excitement in the air.
Do you talk to Kate Upton, Pedro? Is that on your radar? Have you tried to track Kate Upton down, you know, the
No, but we do see J-Lo at these games.
Get out of here.
Because she's dating Alex Rodriguez.
So she rolls in, J-Lo, but I only care about Kate Upton. I mean, if Justin Verlander's pitching, like Fox has not played up Kate Upton as much as I thought they would in watching the games. And I know this is not on your radar, but...
And I don't know if she's hiding inside one of the suites.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
Yeah. All right, I'm just going to make sure on this deal, because if they win tonight...
There's a lot of celebrities, though, that go to the games in L.A.
Do you ever get asked by your people above you to interview celebrities when it gets to this point?
If they're on the field, there's an opportunity, but usually, you know, they roll in right around first pitch, so there's not really an opportunity to do so.
So there's a chance tonight that if Verlander wins, you might grab Kate Upton. I mean, I don't want to say grab Kate Upton, but you might see Kate Upton.
You know what? If there's an opportunity,
yes. That's what we like.
Yes.
Look, for me to go back through the last two games, forget it. It's easier for me to just say to you, what is it that has stood out most to you?
Ugh.
Is it the controversy of a player making a racial face towards a pitcher? Is it a 5'6" guy hitting a ball out of the ball? Is it a guy that really didn't get a whole lot of attention coming up with the game? What direction do you go on all of this?
You know what? That baseball is still king. It is providing so much drama here in October, and really, really exciting drama. Look, just because a game goes 5 hours, it is 13-12, doesn't necessarily mean it was great baseball, but it was definitely great drama. You know, because when pitching staffs are having so much trouble getting outs and walking guys, that's not necessarily crisp, good baseball. But boy, there is a lot of drama, and there's no substitute for that. That is truly the ultimate reality show.
Who's done a better job of managing their bullpens in this series, in your opinion, Hinch or Roberts?
Ooh, gosh. It's, you know what, I would say that I would say A.J. Hinch, because his bullpen is not nearly as strong, and yet they're up 3-2. Dave Roberts has the stronger bullpen. You know, A.J. Hinch does not even have a closer right now. Ken Giles just cannot be put in that position at this point of the season. So he is, you know, whether it's going 3 2/3 innings with Brad Peacock to close out a game because you don't have any options and Peacock is rolling. It's pretty amazing to see AJ juggle the lack of arms that he has and able to have a 3-2 lead.
Jansen's deal, he's got to have a little bit of a confidence shook up in this series now, right?
Yeah, I think there's confidence, and Brad, I also think there's fatigue.
Yeah, that makes sense.
These guys have been going since February.
Right.
And today's Halloween.
Right.
So there's no doubt that fatigue is definitely playing a role. And Jansen's being asked to do something that he hasn't done all year, which is come in and get more than 3 outs.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is weighing on him.
What type of guy is Altuve to deal with? He seems great.
Good.
He seems amazing.
Yeah, very good.
And when you're standing there next to him, you tower over him. No offense.
And I'm not that tall.
You're not that tall, but
I'm not Brad Sesman. Come on, Brad Sesman would be twice.
I'd be putting my elbows on his head. But no, my point on this is you've covered a lot of players through 20, 30 years of doing this, right? You ever seen a five foot six inch dude walk up with a bat that looks like he's playing Little League? And just smokes the ball and makes great plays in the field. And everybody rallies around him. I can't think of a player of his physical stature that comes close at 5'6". We're just talking height guys.
I mean, Pedroia, when he was kind of on top. But that lineup was filled with a lot of guys.
Yeah.
It wasn't like but Pedroia is probably the closest thing I can think of. But yet, you know, Altuve was never a top 100 prospect. He was never a guy. He's really a self-made player. And to see that happen, I think that's one of the beauties of baseball that, you know, in basketball, look, if you're not one of the first 5, 6, 7 picks in the draft, it's an uphill climb.
Right.
I know that a guy like Booker was 15th, but, you know, you have to be really a first-round pick in the NBA in order to probably make it. In baseball, you could be anybody. You could be anybody. I mean, Mark Burley was a 39th round draft pick. Jose Altuve was sent home the first day that he showed up at the Astros Academy in Venezuela because the coaching staff there said, this run can't play. You got to go home. You're too short. He came back the next day and said, just give me a chance. And look where he is.
That's great. Gurriel and Darvish, where'd you come down on that one?
You know, look, there's no defense for somebody putting their fingers on their eyes and making, you know, slant-eyed gesture. There's no defense for that. But in terms of what he said, Brad, I went to high school in Miami with nothing but Cubans.
Yeah.
And anybody of Asian ancestry was referred to as Chino. And they referred to themselves as Chino.
Mm-hmm.
And it is not anything racist at all. You could be Korean, you could be Vietnamese, you could be Japanese. It doesn't matter what, you're referred to as Chino. And, you know, the moms will call their sons Chino and things like that. So there's no, that did not have any racist overture. But we live in a society and in a climate where you can't do anything.
No, it's because people are jumping up and down about the suspension. And it's, look, the players union, one, would get involved. Two.
Oh, he would never, ever have been suspended during the World Series. The appeal would have come in immediately, and he'd be playing.
Yep, and I would agree with that, because you can't take the integrity of the World Series off of that and say that is...
At that point. Yeah, Brad, at that point, there were possibly 4 games left.
Yeah.
Because it happened in Game 3. So if there's 4 games left, that's the equivalent of a 40-game suspension during the regular season.
There you go. We'll let you go off that. Good stuff. But thanks for the insight, Pedro, as always. See you.
Okay.
It's Pedro Gomez there. That was solid. Pedro all over it. Kate up to, I'm rooting for Kate. I just want Verlander tonight to throw it and have to see Pedro there with Kate Upton. I'll take a screenshot of that bad boy. I'll shoot it over at him. That'd be awesome. Peter King is next. We will do our weekly visit with Peter on the Jimmy Garoppolo trade. This impacts the Cardinals from his point of view in which way, and much, much more. Peter will Skype in. And in about 20 minutes, we'll go to the NFL Network, Michael Fabiano, our weekly visit on the fantasy football front. All of our content, you can check it out on our website, sports360az.com. Sports360az.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. Our television show tonight, 16 airings this week, Brad Sesmat Football AZ. It starts tonight and is on before and after the Suns, tonight, tomorrow, and Thursday as well. Back with Peter King next. Now, all things around the National Football League, and even beyond that, if you check out the MMQB.com, they do high school, they do college, they do all sorts of things in different venues throughout the year, but primarily it's the NFL with Peter King, the Monday morning quarterback. You can check out his podcast. This last week he had Chris Mortensen on, and I was somewhere over the Midwest, and I was getting teared up on my flight to Chicago, and it wasn't see my daughter, it was hearing Chris Mortensen actually speak to you. It was well done, Peter.
Thank you. I mean, that was... What was fun about that one, in my mind, is that I've wanted in the last year or so to get Chris to tell me the story from soup to nuts, from A to Z, because clearly so many people who I have talked to, they don't really know what happened to Chris. And I think what kind of surprised people from hearing the reaction to this podcast and to what I wrote on Chris is that he's still battling it. Mm-hmm. And it's difficult for him now still. So fortunately, his tumors on his left lung are getting smaller, and his doctors feel that his treatment is going to end up being positive. But I mean, anytime somebody says to you, you've got stage 4 throat cancer, and this is what a doctor told him, this is an extreme case. Anytime anybody says that, I mean, you have to think, I don't care what anybody says, you have to think to yourself, I mean, how much time do I have left on this planet?
Sure.
And good for Chris, he might have quite a long time. So everybody's pulling for him.
And not to give away the whole podcast, you want to check it out, the Peter King MMQB podcast, but the way that he was informed by the doctor on such short notice, and I'll just leave it at that. Peter King with us, the Monday morning quarterback. All right, a lot of fans here in Arizona are starting to look around saying, wait a minute, Jimmy Garoppolo is now with the 49ers. Carson's gone. Brad, we got to start looking at a quarterback here in 2018. My response has been, well, Steve Keim did find a way to get Carson Palmer here. He did whiff along with Bruce Arians on Logan Thomas, but that was a fourth-round pick. Peter, I'm not asking you to break down Josh Rosen or Sam Darnold or any of that stuff. I'm just curious from a philosophical standpoint what you've seen works best in the NFL. Is it to go get that veteran established quarterback? Is it to go get the youngster? The youngster then gives you cap space. You can work and build around a team like Deshaun Watson. What's your view in a rebuild at quarterback? Because it seems hard to believe that Carson will be here next year and that it's time to go a different direction.
You know, Brad, like I have said, and like I firmly believe this, I think that the Cardinals, wherever they are going to pick, 8 or 10 or 12, whatever, 14, whatever their pick is going to end up being, what I would do if I were them is I would try to convince Carson Palmer to stay one more year, to sign a one-year deal, and to help tutor the next guy. Use next year. I mean, look. I know this from having been with Carson Palmer in the long story I did with him on a week in the life of a quarterback, being with him on Tuesday when the game plan comes into his email box and he starts going over it to say with a fine-tooth comb doesn't do it justice. But when I was with him that week, I was so incredibly impressed on – how well he identifies the important things in a game plan and how he absolutely goes over every possibility in that game plan through the course of the next 3 days. And you know, look, if I have a young quarterback and I say to this young quarterback, I want you to learn how to do things the right way, I want to have somebody there. And I'm not saying Drew Stanton isn't that guy. Mm-hmm. Drew Stanton, from all reports, is a diligent, you know, very good, very supportive backup quarterback. But I'd like to have – I'd like it to come from somebody who I know has out-dueled Aaron Rodgers in a playoff game, you know.
Yeah, sure.
And who has played, you know, at the peak of his profession. And that's why I think it would be worth the money, whatever it would cost, for the Cardinals to have Carson Palmer in the house, basically playing one more year for him, but getting the next quarterback ready for 2019 and beyond.
Did it seem to you, Peter, that with the Garoppolo trade to San Francisco, that was John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan saying, you know what, we've heard all about Sam Darnold, we've heard all about Josh Allen, we've heard all about Josh Rosen. We don't believe that any of these players are going to turn into something. Thus, we're willing to part with a number two, even though they had two twos. People forget about that. They had two second-round picks. That it's better for us to go with Garoppolo. We've seen enough for him on tape. I get it from the 49ers standpoint. Not sure I agree on the Patriots standpoint, but take me through the 49ers thinking on this.
Well, to me, this would have been easy for the 49ers. And look, I really like the 49ers scouting department. I like Adam Peters. I was lucky enough, fortunate enough, to be in their draft room on draft day.
That's right.
Writing about their draft and about John Lynch. And I was highly impressed by their road scouts, by how they ran things that day, and by their vice president of scouting, Adam Peters. So clearly, they've been told they at least have a preliminary idea about Sam Darnold, who I keep hearing, Brad, is going back to USC for 2018.
Hmm.
But be that as it may, even if he did come out, Sam Darnold, Josh Rosen, Josh Allen, Baker Mayfield,
Mason Rudolph, yeah,
whoever it is, just keep one thing in mind. You know, John Lynch had to know two things. I don't really love these quarterbacks. There's no two or three guys in here who you feel like absolutely categorically, they've got an 80% chance of hitting on this guy. However, he also had to know that there's a very good chance that Cleveland's going to have the first pick in this draft. And if you look at it that way, and I'm not trying to be a smart or a Weisenheimer here.
Sure, sure.
But I'm trying to just basically try to put you in John Lynch's shoes, which is that Cleveland absolutely unequivocally is taking a quarterback number one. They probably, whoever they choose, that's going to be their guy, and it's very likely they're going to have the first pick in the draft. They're one of the worst teams we've seen in years. So they're going to have the first pick in the draft. So we're not even going to – if we identify one guy as our guy, you know, we have no idea if we could even get him anyway.
Right.
But the bigger question is, I think – or the bigger issue is, in my opinion, that John Lynch right now – knew that he probably wasn't going to be able to get Kirk Cousins from Washington, and he didn't know, he wasn't sure what he would be able to get in the draft. And they have loved Garoppolo, the Browns loved Garoppolo, and if you can get Garoppolo for what is probably going to be the 34th, 35th pick in the draft.
You do it.
I mean, how can you not do that, right, in my opinion?
Well, and it's interesting too, Peter, because now you look at the NFC West, and there are all sorts of questions 2 months ago about can Jared Goff play? This is going to be the year where Jared Goff can prove himself, and clearly he has, and the Rams have established themselves, a pretty darn good team. Then you look at what San Francisco is doing. I think they're going about it the right way. I've known John since high school. I covered Johnny in high school at Torrey Pines. John's a smart guy. Dad's been in the NFL. I mean, he's going to figure it out up there along with Kyle Shanahan. Then you look at where Seattle is, and they never seem to hit a speed bump. And that leaves what's going on here in Arizona, a team that feels stale to me, a team that feels like it has some nice parts, but not too many of them top to bottom. And a division that was laughed at, it was the NFC worst for years and years. And now all of a sudden, I don't know how to tag it, but it's becoming a division that, boy, the Cardinals are starting to look up, I think, and better make some moves here quickly because there's teams in front of them that are getting it done, from my view. What do you see?
Well, I mean, all you have to do is look at the quarterback position.
Yeah.
You know, long term, you know, Seattle has Russell Wilson, who's a top five quarterback in the NFL. You know, the Rams have an emerging quarterback who is going to be somewhere between middle of the road and good, I think, you know, borderline top 10, and Jared Goff. Mm-hmm. And now you have the 49ers who believe they have their quarterback of the future in Garoppolo. You know, what's so funny about that, Brad, is that if you would have said to me 1 year ago, okay, if you would have just said to me 1 year ago that in a year the Cardinals would be far and away number four in the passing game sweepstakes for the future in the NFC West, I would have said, hey, no matter who they had, they're still going to be competitive with the Rams and the 49ers because they don't have anybody. Right. And the Rams and the 49ers both have emerged now with quarterbacks. So clearly you're right. It's up to the Cardinals to catch up.
30 seconds, Peter. What happens with Ezekiel Elliott? Is there going to be another turn on this story? That's what Cowboy fans out here want to know.
I don't think so. I think he's going to have to serve the next six games. And, you know, the sad part for Cowboy fans is that, okay, they're 4-3. They're playing really well. Now they lose him. I mean, the Dallas Cowboys started 3-3 against a pretty pedestrian opening schedule, mm-hmm. you know, that included the Giants, the Cardinals, you know, and I look at that, and by the way, the 49ers, and I look at that and I say essentially, what would the Cowboys have been without Ezekiel Elliott for the first six games? Would they have been any worse than 3-3? Mm. I mean, they could have had Ezekiel Elliott back by mid-October and been in great shape. Now they have to play the Kansas City Chiefs, the Atlanta Falcons, and the Philadelphia Eagles in the next 3 weeks without their best player. So, I mean, I don't think you ever have much of a chance in winning appeal against the commissioner when the commissioner does not have to have guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. You know, all he has to have is, I deem that this guy should be suspended for six games. And so I think the Cowboys, honestly, in this thing made a mistake. And so did Elliott. Should have taken their medicine at the beginning of the year, learned from the Tom Brady thing that eventually you're going to serve your time when you get suspended in a case like this.
Interesting. Good stuff there, Peter. As always, thank you.
All right, Brad, take care.
There's Peter King with us, the Monday Morning Quarterback. Joins us every week via Skype from his home in New York City, mmqb.com. Great content there that you can check out. And a lot of fun to talk to Peter. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic. I'm Brad Sussmat. And now time to go to Los Angeles, where all eyes are on the Dodgers and Astros tonight, but all eyes right now because the trade deadline in full swing up till this afternoon. Michael Fabiano right there, NFL Network senior fantasy analyst, right there on the site at the NFL Network. We've already seen Jimmy Garoppolo traded, Jay Ajayi traded, Ezekiel Elliott suspended, all this stuff going down. So I'm going to start with this. Are you hearing anything involving fantasy guys that have yet to be moved, that could be moved in the next 2 hours? Because in your building, you hear stuff, right? You hear stuff.
I'm not hearing anything that anyone else isn't reporting on Twitter. T.Y. Hilton's name has come up, but that's probably unlikely because it would take a lot to get a wide receiver of his caliber. I was shocked with the Jay Ajayi news, to be quite honest with you. He's the best offensive player they have outside of Jarvis Landry, and now you're looking at Kenyon Drake and Damian Williams, who will clearly both be very popular waiver wire pickups, and I would pick up Drake before Williams, but you're looking at a committee. This trade deadline, number one, how much fun is it to actually have movement in the NFL at the trade deadline, because typically that's reserved for other sports, but now the NFL is jumping on board, which is great. But it's creating more backfield committees, and the Ezekiel Elliott suspension is creating another backfield committee. So with six teams off this week and bye weeks still coming up over the next several, it's going to be tough sledding at that running back position if you didn't draft or use the waiver wire well over the first 7 or 8 weeks.
I just had Peter King on, and he felt that the Cowboys mishandled this situation with Ezekiel Elliott, that they should have just taken their medicine early because the schedule gets more difficult. From a fantasy standpoint, would you agree with that? He's been great for me the last few weeks, but did they mishandle this?
Well, from a fantasy perspective, everyone was hoping that this would somehow end up being delayed until next year, and they weren't prepared for it.
Right.
So there's no good way to replace Elliott. He's one of the three or four best running backs in fantasy football, and he's been unreal the last 2 weeks. So what I've heard is that Alfred Morris projects to be the starter, but it's going to be a backfield committee, and there's a couple of different opinions on why Darren McFadden's been inactive. One, well, the Cowboys like Morris more. Or two, the Cowboys wanted to keep McFadden healthy so he can take over the starting role in the event that Zeke is suspended. Either way, both of these guys need to be added in all leagues. And waiver wires run overnight, so you are going to see a lot of claims put in for running backs like Drake, like both the Cowboys running backs, like Alex Collins, like Marlon Mack.
Yeah, Marlon Mack's name, I've gotten a lot in the mailbag this morning about him. What's your view of Marlon Mack?
Most talented running back in Indianapolis. Three of his last four games, he's had double-digit PPR points. And a player who I think could end up seeing more work down the stretch because the Colts are a team that's not likely to make the playoffs. And with Andrew Luck, well, probably unlikely at this point, although I don't know for sure, to come back, you could see the Colts starting to use some of these younger players and see what they have, because Frank Gore is 34 years old, and who knows if he comes back next season and Marlon Mack could be their guy. They want to see what they have in this kid, and he's an explosive rookie. So if he's out there, I mean, pick him up off the waiver wire.
And Jacoby Brissett, same thing, right? I'm getting a lot of questions about Brissett as a quarterback this week.
Yeah, because there's six teams off and because he's got a pretty decent matchup, he's going to end up being streamed in some leagues. But he hadn't been great in terms of being a reliable fantasy starter. 1 week up, 1 week down, that kind of thing. But last week he was better than we thought he was going to be, a lot of that, because they threw the ball a ton, although it wasn't a lot to T.Y. Hilton.
T.Y.'s
been, at this point, T.Y. and Amari Cooper, if you decided to bench them, I would not argue with you. And I'm talking about benching them for guys like Paul Richardson and Robbie Anderson, who are also going to be added off the waiver wire in a lot of leagues this week. And you know I am a big fan of the running back position, and this year has seen the further deterioration of the wide receiver position.
Mm-hmm.
So next year, and you know we're still halfway through this season, but I like to look forward next year. I mean, that first round is going to be almost all running backs. Maybe Antonio Brown will be up there, and then maybe all running backs.
Well, and I'm going to take Juju Schuster-Smith and just stash him this week.
Can't use him this week because Pittsburgh's on a bye.
Pittsburgh's on a bye, but this is the week to get him. So
yeah, he's a talented player. It was funny too because he had tweeted out, hey, you know, you guys show me all this love, but you don't pick me up on your fantasy team. Well, I picked him up and I started him, and he had a pretty good week for me, and he had a good week for a lot of people. And with Martavis Bryant sort of being, you know, I guess phased out of the offense, all of a sudden Juju's worth a waiver wire claim.
Michael Fabiano of the Hall of Fame, before I let you go into the mailbag, a lot of questions about Garoppolo and what direction do you go. This week they say they're going with C.J. Beathard against the Cardinals. What's your view of Garoppolo now in San Francisco, Michael, from a fantasy standpoint?
I mean, it's a huge upgrade over a rookie quarterback, without question. Will Garoppolo be as good as everyone thinks he can be? I mean, time will tell. He's in a good spot with a good offensive mind as his head coach and an offense that's going to get better talent-wise through the draft or over the next year or two and potentially through free agency. So he's also got the advantage of being coached by Bill Belichick for his entire career and being under the tutelage of Tom Brady. So I like it as a long-term play. I don't know about it as a short-term play. We've seen several quarterbacks break out this year, and so the need isn't going to be there as much for QBs once we get through these bye-week apocalypses that we've seen six teams off. I wouldn't add him just yet. I really wouldn't, unless you're in a deeper league.
Question here from Mark Keenan Allen off. Ty Montgomery, a good play this week. What's Michael's view?
Ty Montgomery is hard to start. The last time the Packers played, it was Aaron Jones. And Montgomery did not see a lot of snaps, did not see a lot of touches. Montgomery, to me, is a desperation play at this point, and it's too bad because he started off the season, in terms of fantasy production, he started off pretty well. But right now, as it stands, from what we saw the last time the Packers were on the field, Aaron Jones is the guy to start there in that backfield.
Okay, one other question, and let's go back on Ajay because we barely touched on it. What's this do for him in Philly? I mean, you were surprised he left Miami, but is this a good fantasy fit for him?
It is. Better offense, better offensive line. Now, the one question I have is, do the Eagles completely go away from LeGarrette Blount? He wasn't putting up huge numbers, but you know, his yards per carry average is pretty good. He was very solid in terms of yards after contact, but they didn't trade for Jay Ajayi for nothing. And I assume he will end up being the starter and being as close to a featured back as you can get. Will he potentially lose some goal line work to Blount? We'll see. Wendell Smallwood is also in the mix there as well. But you definitely would think that based on what he's done or not done in Miami to this point, that a move to Philadelphia is clearly an upgrade.
Yeah, and with 2 hours to go, you know, I've been hearing that the Eagles, with the injury to Peters on their offensive line, trying to bolster their offensive line because of this trade in the next couple of hours. So we'll see if something comes out of
there. It's a lot of fun, man. Like when the NFL teams are trading during the deadline, it's a lot of fun because that's like one of the best times of any sports calendar. When you are at the trade deadline and there's baseball trades, basketball trades, and hockey, I would assume they make trades. I'm not much of a follower of hockey, but the NFL has always been that sport where there's not a lot of trades going on. Now, that's a different story, and it just adds to the fun of the league.
Let you go off that. Appreciate the time and insight as always, Michael. Thanks.
See you, pal.
Michael Fabiano right there at the NFL Network in Los Angeles, Culver City to be exact. NFL Network senior fantasy analyst. He joins us every week for fantasy football content. You can check out that whole interview. This show repeats, okay, as you're watching it. It repeats hour after hour, but it's also on a podcast. So if you're in your car, you can listen to it on a podcast or out on your bike ride or wherever you're working out. Put it up on the podcast every day. And we appreciate our sponsors, our partners. We are self-funded, guys. So if we don't have sponsors, we don't do this. So we appreciate those that are involved with us, those that have been with us through the years and how they support us, and those that are coming on board with us. It's great to have you on board. We love doing this day in and day out. Our chairman of the board is Jared Nielsen, and Eric Sorensen, as always, is the producer of this program. Our television show is tonight, following the Suns against Brooklyn on Fox Sports Arizona. Brad Sussmat, Football AZ. Have a good day. Thanks for checking out this podcast on Sports360AZ.com, brought to you by your Valley Hyundai dealers.